Thank you for listening to the Missio Dei Uptown podcast. We are a church committed to our neighborhood, seeking to love and serve our beautifully unique community as we join God as He makes all things new. To learn more about us, visit mduptown.com.
So to start this morning, I want to ask you, I'm just going to name it. It is an out-of-pocket question, but I promise I'm going somewhere. Yeah, and I don't want you to give me the easy Sunday morning answer because I don't know if there is one. Who do you argue with in the shower? Who do you argue? And I know you know what I'm talking about, right? That is the one place where I like think of and even say things out loud where I'm just like, that would have been a good comeback to them. Just like so many one arguments in the shower. It is a wild place. A better question maybe to ask is whose voices or what sort of voices are you battling with in your head? In other words, what are you being accused of? What are the things that you're hearing where it's like, oh, I do have to be better at that. Oh, I did do that poorly. Because I think here's the thing that's true for most of us. We have a rotating cast of voices that are constantly weighing in on our interior lives, even when we don't want them to be. And I think sometimes we will map someone, we will impute someone's, like, one time this one person said something to me, therefore they sort of exist in my head as the example of critical, like, thoughts about my appearance or critical thoughts about my performance, right? We always are mapping these voices on. And I think that they rotate into the prime position depending on our situation, right? At work, it might be the voice that says, you are only as good as your last performance review. At home, it might be fear that says, you are failing the people who need you most. In conflict, it'll be an old wound that tells us what happened last time is going to happen the same this time. And maybe sometimes in the quiet moments, often I think the loudest voice we experience can be the shame that says you know who you really are, right? And are you really gonna get up and go to church on Sunday morning, right? We've got a lot of voices that make a lot of calls in our lives. They play the referee of the interior life. And so the question I wanna ask this morning is not whether or not those voices are loud, because I know sometimes they are, or if you hear them, I think all of us probably hear us in some form or another, the critical nature that happens in our own heads. But the question I want to ask is whether or not any of them have authority in our lives. And I'm not asking whether or not they should, because I think all of us know the answer to that. But I'm just asking, what voices have authority in your lives? What voices make calls about what we should do? What voices tell us we should move with more anxiety because of the fears that they're bringing up? What voices have authority in our lives? Last week, we talked about the exchanging of robes with a king. We talked about how God, the King of Kings, came to us in our mess and handed up us his robe. It was a robe of righteousness, a robe of standing before the Father, a robe of identity. And he said, this is who you are now. And Paul invited us to put it on and to stop reaching for the old robe. And this week, I was actually supposed to preach on this as well last week, but I'm like, there is way too much going on. And so this week is a continuation of what Paul was saying, a building up of what he was trying to get at. Because I think wearing the robe is one thing. Being seen as righteous is one thing. But it's a whole other thing to allow that external righteousness, to allow our identity, the way we are seen by God, to dictate our inner life. So that's what we're going to get into today. But first, let me pray. Lord, again, I am so grateful that we get to spend so much time in the book of Colossians. I sing what you have for us, that you have reminded us again that we are chosen, we are holy, we are loved. And out of that, we are called to a life that is just far greater than anything we could have even imagined for ourselves. And so, Lord, let us have eyes to see and ears to hear that this is the good life, that wholeness and peace and being called to put on our robes and live in light of those are good things. Lord, this morning I pray that whatever is for me is forgotten, whatever is yours is remembered. Help me to tell, or help me to be about your name, your glory, your fame, not the, my own, not the name of Missio Dei Uptown, but yours and yours alone. God, help me to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. In your son's name I pray. Amen. Now, I had Eli read three verses for us, verses 15 to 17, but we're going to spend all of our time in verse 15 because I think it's a really good setup for the rest of the passage, and I do encourage you, as we walk away from our exploration of verse 15, to sit in the whole passage, sit in 16 and 17 as well, and see what the Lord is showing you. But to walk through verse 15, what we're going to do is we're going to walk through it backwards because I want to kind of show you what it builds to begin with, in order we can sort of understand why Paul is calling us in the first part to do what he calls us to do. So verse 15 reads this, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you are called to peace. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you are called to peace." Okay, let's start from the back. Since as members of one body, you are called to peace. And I think if you have read Colossians 3, if you have been with us, this is not surprising that Paul says this, right? Especially here in chapter 3, Paul has already been hitting us over and over and over with this idea. He calls us to get rid of anger and rage. There is no Jew or Greek, slave or free. Christ is in all and is all. And then he calls us to clothe ourselves with compassion, with kindness, with humility, with gentle, with patience, bear with one another, forgive one another as the Lord forgive you. And so it makes sense for him to sort of conclude with in this section, we are all one body. We are called to peace. This is everything I've been calling you to, right? You can't act toward each other with rage if we are one body or if we are living in peace. You can't do peace without humility. You can't do peace without compassion. All of this is sort of culminating into this idea of being one body where there is peace between us. So yes, we have been called to peace. There's no argument there, right? But the question becomes, what is peace? What is peace? I think in the early biblical times map pretty well to where we are today. At the time of Jesus' coming, I've talked about this before, but there was the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. And the way that this was achieved was not by any sort of like good feeling pacts between one another where we treat each other well. It was entirely by the sword, right? Everyone was under peace because they were under the foot of the emperor or the king. They were made to keep the peace, which meant that they were made to just keep the status quo. And very often, I think the ways that we think about peace are very similar, right? And so I'm going to walk through a couple of things that peace is not. And this first one is very much highlighted by the way that we often think of peace. So peace is not kept. It is not the absence of conflict. I think the way that the Pax Romana maps onto today is not that like we are a culture that ignores conflict or avoids conflict. Maybe we are as people, but our country does not avoid conflict. We bomb other countries, right? But the reality is what we do is we avoid looking at what our country is, at what our tax dollars are doing, right? And so a peace is sort of a false peace of that's not really impacting my life directly, and therefore I'm going to just turn my eyes and I'm going to keep the peace. I'm going to avoid conflict. And I think often this doesn't just show up in like what we don't look at, but how we engage with one another, right? When we keep the peace, it usually means that someone is swallowing something that they shouldn't have had to swallow, or they're avoiding a conversation that actually needs to happen. And they call that avoidance maturity. But that is not peace, right? That is a low bar of peace. That is just a lack of conflict. Or it is delayed conflict that often ends in bitterness or resentment. And I think that this is why so many of our relationships, particularly in our culture, don't end up in like a hard spot. They just end up in a spot where we don't engage with one another at all. I would rather harbor what I have towards you in the name of keeping the peace until it is too much and I just can't be around you at all, right? So peace is not kept. Next one, which I think is huge for church culture, peace is not blind loyalty. And I want to say this clearly because I think that the church has done a lot of damage in this area. See, the inability to question, to name that something is wrong, the inability of that is not peace. That is compliance dressed up in spiritual language. See, real peace is not silencing the voice of legitimate concerns. I think that that, particularly in churches, is the foreground to abuse. Especially when we often, even if we work against it, we often center one individual as the arbiter of knowledge and holiness. And even though I know everything and am perfect, the reality is when we elevate, okay, I know I'm literally elevated, so this is a little bit ironic, but when we elevate me to a place as just not a member of the community, but as someone who is just like, no, we are always going to do it this way. I rule with an iron fist. The reality is that bodies are going to be left behind, right? I think about I actually didn't listen to it all, but I've gotten the spark notes. The podcast about Mark Driscoll's church, right? And there's a quote in there where he said, behind the bus of where we're going is a pile of bodies, and by God's grace, one day it'll be a mountain. And it's just like, how do we get to that, y'all? Like, I know our church isn't going to be for everyone. But if our church is leaving in its wake a pile or a mountain of bodies, y'all better come talk to me, right? Y'all better make sure that I am kept in check, that Tiana is kept in check, that Tiana is keeping me, she actually does that. Because the reality is, like I said, real peace is not the silencing of legitimate concern, right? If you want to talk about like the color of the, we don't do this in here, so I don't even say this, but I'm still going to say it. If you want to talk about the color of like the curtains, talk to someone else. But if you are just like, the reality is there is something going on that is creating some sort of power dynamic, even if it's not between me and you, but between other people in this church, we have to figure that out, y'all. Because peace is not blind loyalty. And finally, it's a little bit of the opposite, but peace is not permanent, at least not yet. Anyone who tells you that following Jesus produces this sort of interrupted calmness that you will never lose is probably actually just trying to sell you something, right? Instead, I want to invite you into a lifelong journey with Jesus, knowing that there are going to be highs, there are going to be lows. And I say this because I don't want any of us, if we are missing out on the peace that Jesus is calling us to in a short season, I don't want any of us to be afraid that like we're not holy enough, we're not Christian enough, we're missing the boat. No, I want us to get back into that sort of healthy peace. But the reality is we live in a broken world and it's going to be disrupted. And so peace is not yet permanent. And I look forward to the day it is and the new heavens and new earth. But just because you don't have peace in a moment does not make you a bad Christian. Okay, so what is it? What is peace if it is not these things? The word that Paul uses here carries the full weight of the Hebrew concept that I'd love to talk about. It's the idea of shalom. And so peace is completeness. Peace is shalom. Peace is wholeness, is the idea. See, when you have shalom, peace looks a lot less like conflict of war or conflict in general, and a lot more like a puzzle where every piece is in its rightful place. And in this, it is deeply settling that when things don't happen the way they ought to, everything else is in its rightful place, and it's a lot easier to put back the puzzle piece. So that's peace, is this idea of interrelatedness, this idea that when you are good, I am good, right? Because I think that this sort of peace, this wholeness, where every piece interacts with the other as it ought, is so important to understand, because I think when we do understand this, it changes how we behave with everyone, right? Like, I think about if I'm at home and I want to, in the colloquial sense, keep peace, I probably want to put like Jay in one room, Alex in another, and I want for things to be quiet, right? And I think sometimes we treat each other like that. Like, that person disrupts my life in the ways that they talk to me or in the ways that they that bring up things that I just don't even enjoy, right? And not so it's not in like a sinful way, just in a sort of like inconvenienced way. And so we're like, we're gonna set them out of my lives because I want to keep my peace. But peace is interaction, right? And peace is a recognition that we are one body, as Paul calls it. See, I don't know if you guys have ever gotten like an ankle injury and then you have to be on crutches or something and then your other knee hurts, right? The reality is when one body or one part of the body is not in peace, the rest of the body is not in peace, right? My 4-day migraine that I had the other day, it wasn't like, oh, my head hurts, but the rest of my body's doing great, right? No, I was in bed like for 4 days. And so the reality is when we recognize that we are one body, that peace means peace for the whole body, we recognize that all flourishing is mutual. That because we are one body, I am at my best when you are at your best. And so peace then becomes a community goal, not a zero-sum game. That's the picture of peace. Okay, so that's the first or the last section of this verse. Since as members of one body, you are called to peace. That's the goal that Paul is calling us to. But how do we get there? Well, let's work backwards. Let's start with the phrase, in your hearts. In your hearts. See, I think in our current context, this sort of sounds just like a greeting card. Usually when we read about verses like of our heart, right? Like, oh, Jesus is going to be the peace of my heart. It's like, oh, cool, I read that in a Hallmark card, right? But the heart is not, in our context, I think the heart is often the seat of desires and of emotions. But it was very different. It was that, but it was also much more than that in biblical times. See, in the New Testament, the heart is the total inner self. The total inner self. It's where thinking, feeling, and willing all happen together. So Jesus, to give you some examples throughout the Bible, there's a part where Jesus says evil thoughts come from the heart, right? We think with our heart. Paul talks about the heart understanding and believing. Understanding, that's kind of a wild idea. God searches and knows the heart is what the Bible says. It says the greatest command, love God with everything you have, puts the heart at first. It puts the heart as the sort of integrated center for the whole person. And so when we see this idea of in your hearts, what it's really calling to us to is like what dictates what we do. Like what is that the center of our lives? What is sort of the fuel for how we behave in our world? Another way that people often put it is like what gets you up in the morning, right? That's very often a way to understand what the Bible talks about when it talks about our heart. See, I think about the heart like a sort of chair in the middle of your life. And whatever sits in that chair dictates everything else. And so if your physical image, for example, is in the center, is in the chair of your life, is in the heart of your life. Your heart is dictated, is ruled by that, as the passage says. Then you might starve yourself in order to make sure that you look the way you want to look. Or you might work out like in an inordinate sort of like unhealthy ways where it's just like my workout actually takes priority over everything else in my life, right? If it's success, if it's money that dictates, that sits at the heart or sits in the chair of your life, then I'm going to work myself to the bone and throw aside everything else. This is how people get to the point where it's just like their marriages, their lives fall apart because we have just worked ourselves to the end because that's what dictates our lives. That is what is sitting at the center of our lives, right? If your partner is in that chair, you make them everything and you're just going to crush them with expectations, right? Expectations that they were never intended to hold. The heart and what sits at its center tells you everything about how a person will behave in any given moment. Which gets to the next word in our passage. It's the word that I think really dictates the entire passage and what it means. It's the idea of rule. And I'll be honest with you, I like was doing my prep and I read through this passage and I do my best work on dog walks. And so I was like, all right, Copper, we're going for a walk. I'm gonna think about the idea of rule. And I was just thinking about Christ like sitting in the throne, ruling as a king would rule, and his peace sort of ruling our kingdom, or the kingdom which was our heart. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna talk about the Lion King and, you know, whatever you could see is covered by Mufasa, right? And then I start to dig into it and I was like, oh, that's not what this word means at all. Like those things are true, but this actually is a lot more of a word in which a referee rules. And so this is, and I think the best way to think about it is not like an NFL or football ref, for example. It's not a ruling that is done like making sure you follow every single rule in terms of like, don't go out of bounds, get both feet in when you catch the ball, right? Like don't pull people down by the face mask. And it's a lot more of like a gymnastics judge, a gymnastics referee, which Jamie did gymnastics. And so I am obviously an expert then. I didn't know her in high school, but she's told me enough. And the reality is for a referee in gymnastics, what they do is they sort of like decide who gets the prize. And there are parameters, right? But it's like you get a 10 or you get below a 10. Actually, I don't know enough because I don't remember what the... Yeah. I tried to act really smart. And see, I'm just showing you that I am not the arbiter of knowledge. What do they score out of now? 10. We'll stick with 10 because that's... Yeah. Okay, thank you. Happy Mother's Day to my beautiful wife. So they're the ones that are sort of ruling what dictates the perfect 10 or whatever score you get. There are also, to help us understanding, there's two other passages that use this word rule in the New Testament. It's actually the only other two places that it's used. And in this context, it's used as a verb, like let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, dictate or sort of referee your heart. In the other two places, it's used as a noun. So let's look at those real quick. 1 Corinthians 9 says, do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? That is the word for, that is the noun of to rule. It's like what you dictate, what the referee would dictate as what you receive is the prize. So that's the word. Only one gets a prize. Run in such a way as to get the prize. In other words, being ruled is having won, right? Philippians 3 says it the same way. I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Jesus. In other words, when Paul says, let the peace of Christ rule, what he is saying is let the peace of Christ referee. Let the peace of Christ make the judgment call, dictate how it is that we behave in order to win the prize. It's something that is sort of making the call, something that is determining what a 10 looks like, something that is always deciding what counts and what doesn't in how you live your life. And some of you are confused because you're like, everything I have heard about Christianity is that it's not about what we do, but it's about who we've been made to be. And that is true. But this is in the context of already been told who we are. And he's saying, you have been made to be at peace. Therefore, let that dictate, let that rule, let that officiate how you now live your life. See, every single day, your heart is contested territory. I think every single moment, your heart is contested territory. There are competing voices, competing desires, competing loyalties that are going to always show up and make their case. And so the question becomes, which referee do you allow to make the decisions? See, I think your ego will walk in and say, you were really disrespected in that moment. You need to respond. Your fear walks in and says, you are in trouble here. You need to protect yourself. Retreat, right? You see how they're dictating, they're refereeing how we ought to move in the world. Your pride walks in and says, you were right. Make sure everyone knows it. Your woundedness, right, will walk in and say, this is familiar, and it's going to end the same way it did last time. And into that contested space where the ego, where your pride, where your fears all stand, vying for power, Paul says, let the peace of Christ overrule them all. And let the peace of Christ be the one who makes the call. And this is the part I want us to really understand. Because Paul does not just say, let peace rule. He is very specific. He says, let the peace of Christ rule. And I think that that distinction tells us everything. Because, like I said earlier, the world is not short on versions of peace, right? We have been sold in 1,000 different forms what peace can look like. Peace looks like a paid-off mortgage. Peace looks like a clean bill of health. Peace looks like a relationship that is finally stable, a kid who's finally making good decisions, right? Very often, the peace that we are sold, and those are good things. We love some of those things, right? But we are often sold a peace that is purely circumstantial. And I think we are genuinely talented at arranging our lives to make sure that that sort of circumstantial peace is achieved, right? The sort of comfort that we are always seeking that passes as peace then becomes the center of our lives. We think we're doing it right because our lives working out all great, when in reality, we're just trying to control the circumstances. But here's the problem. Circumstantial peace is only as stable as your circumstances. And circumstances, as you have probably noticed, change. Your health goes awry, right? The market crashes because of whatever. I don't really understand the market, so. But it's not reliable, right? Your kid, after making tons and tons of progress over 2 years, I shouldn't have been as specific because I don't want to talk about, realize I was talking about my kid. So let's step away from that one. But like after making so much progress, there's regression, right? Even in your own lives, you make tons of progress and then there's regression. And all of a sudden you're like, well, the peace is already ruined. I might as well go to war. But the peace of Christ is not a peace that depends on your circumstances being arranged correctly. It is a peace that was built, constructed, secured, finished on the cross. It was a peace that was bought at enormous cost. See, in Colossians 1, just two chapters earlier, Paul says that God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things through Christ, making peace through his blood shed on a cross. Our peace was already purchased. It was already paid for. See, the hostility between us and God, the broken relationship, the weight of everything we had done and everything that had been done to us, Christ absorbed it all. On the cross, he took on every reason we had to be at war with God and with each other, and he made peace. Which means that when Paul says, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, he is saying, let the peace that cost him everything be that which you put at the center of your lives. Let the peace that was secured not by your performance, not by your ability to rearrange your circumstances or to hold it all together, but by his blood, let that be the deciding voice in your heart. And I think that that is a very different peace than the world sells us. It's a very different peace that does something completely different to us. And what I think it does is it invites us in to safety. Genuinely safe. Not just this intellectual idea about being safe, but actually safe. I think very often, I talked about this a little bit last week, but very often our most destructive behavior comes from when we feel unsafe, right? The defensiveness, the people-pleasing, our rage, our withdrawal, our need to control, the inability to be honest, all of it comes from our perceived lack of felt safety. Something in us believes that we are not protected, that we have to defend ourselves, that we have to look out for ourselves, that we are fundamentally on our own. And so what we do is that we then allow other things to make the calls in order to feel safe, right? I think genuinely, and I think we know this, but genuinely, the only reason that these ICE raids in our city and across the nation have even worked is because of the fear, the lack of feeling safe, even when it's not impacting people's lives, right? We are very often, when we are at our worst, acting out of a fear that is an unnecessary fear. Jesus has made us right with God, y'all. The reality is we are safe in his hands, that regardless of what they do to us on this side of eternity, we are all good. And so the reality is it's not our circumstances. It's not the people around us being reliable. But it's because the one who made us, who knows us, who chose us, he is the one who has made us safe. He is holding us, and nothing can change that. And I think when you actually believe that, not just in your head, but in the chair of your heart, that your whole life is different. And I did a little bit too much talking, so I'm just going to give you three words that I want you to reflect on. It changes your life, I think, in three really significant ways. It changes in rest, in reconciliation, and in reclamation. You can tell I'm getting better as a preacher because all the words start with the same letter. It starts in rest, in that we don't have to be hypervigilant anymore. We are safe with God. We are safe to just relax, to be ourselves, and to continue to pursue being our whole selves in light of God. We can relax. It gives us reconciliation. We have been made to be reconciled with the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, replaced into a relationship with him. And as a result, we can seek reconciliation with each other. I think about the puzzle metaphor. If a piece is broken in half, the one who's putting it all together has to take time and make sure that that piece is no longer broken, but whole. That is what has happened to us in Jesus. And that means that we can be placed right back into the puzzle to make the whole picture look more beautiful. And then it allows for reclamation. It allows for us to reclaim who we truly are. That, like I said last week, we are chosen, we are holy, we are loved. Peace allows us to reclaim who we were always intended to be. And so how I want to end with this is that I have covered every single word except for the first word. And I think that this, again, changes all of the ways in which we navigate this. And that is the word let. See, Paul doesn't say, make the peace of Christ rule. He doesn't say, earn the peace of Christ, achieve the peace of Christ, work until the peace of Christ rules. He says, let. Which means that the peace is already there. Like I said, it is already available, already in the building. This referee who determines, dictates the ways that our hearts responds in whatever circumstance we are in, is not waiting for you to act, get your act together before he shows up. He is already here. And so the question is whether or not you're going to let him do his job. Let. And I think that is the most countercultural thing in this passage. Because everything within us wants us to be the ones that's holding the whistle. We want to manage the interior court. We want to negotiate between the voices and keep everything in order. I lost my train of thought. Because at some level, we have been convinced that if we don't, nobody will. But that is precisely the lie that the peace of Christ exposes. Because it has already been done. It is finished. And I think that the reality here, I want to be clear, like intentionality is necessary, right? It is necessary to understand what this peace looks like in our navigation of the Bible, in our surrounding ourselves with people who get this as well, who've been walking a lifetime with Jesus. There's intentionality in taking off the old self and putting on the new self. But you don't have to be the one to do the work to achieve the peace. It has already been achieved. And so all we can do is let. Let the peace of Christ rule. Let it referee. Let it be the thing that steps into the contested space of your heart and makes the calls. Let it tell you where your shame ought to go. Let it hold you when your fear says protect yourself. Let it be enough when the ego says you aren't. You were called to peace. You were made to exist in peace. And the only thing standing between you and it is this one small, enormous word, let. And so give it all, this is my invitation to you, is to give it all to God. Let him be the one who guides us, dictates our lives, and shows us what it looks like to live in this peace. Because when we don't, we try it ourselves, and people who have not been established in peace very often make war. So our invitation is to let. Amen?
Thank you for listening to the Missio Dei Uptown podcast. We are a church committed to our neighborhood, seeking to love and serve our beautifully unique community as we join God as he makes all things new. To learn more about us, visit mduptown.com.